Hello, dear listener, and welcome to On the Page. This is the podcast that goes side by side with the Writers Festival of Belgium. I'm Alia Papageorgiou, a longtime journalist who cannot stop asking people for interviews. Please let me know if there's any authors you think we should invite onto the show, or we should invite onto the stage when we have our Writers Festival of Belgium on October 5th and the 6th. Today's conversation is with an Australian journalist who now lives in Copenhagen. He'll be joining us in October in Leuven. Her name's Lisa Martin, and I met her in 2016 when I was working as a press officer at the EU delegation to Australia, and she won the European Union Journalism Prize, where we organised for her to fly to Brussels and see the institutions and have a program as a visitor, which is something that still happens. It's actually the EU Australia Qantas Journalism Prize, I should mention, which was very exciting and fun, and it was interesting to introduce them to what happens in Brussels, especially as some of them worked, like Lisa did, in Canberra at the Parliament House covering government there. In any case, she's a longtime journalist, has also been a foreign correspondent in South Asia, in Thailand. Yeah, we just had a wide-ranging conversation. She also was involved with the press club in Bangkok when she was in Thailand. She was president of the foreign press club there. But enjoy the conversation. Let us know if there's any comments.
Greetings to everybody from Copenhagen. I moved here 7 months ago, and I was living in Bangkok for 3 years, and I was a Southeast Asia correspondent. I arrived in Bangkok during the global pandemic in September 2020, and I did 2 weeks of hotel quarantine, and then I had to go and cover a pro-democracy protest the very next day after being in a room by myself for 2 weeks, and suddenly here I was in a crowd of 30,000 young Thais protesting for democracy and for reforms to the monarchy. And then I spent like the next 3 months trying not to be tear gassed and water cannoned at these demonstrations. And then we had a military coup next door in Myanmar the following year. So yeah, it was quite a busy time in the Mekong while I was based in Bangkok. And I moved to Copenhagen last year for love. And it's you cannot get more different cities, I think. Like, Bangkok's just this heaving metropolis, and the traffic is horrendous, and it's got this amazing energy, and there's street food vendors and motorbikes and tuk-tuks flying past, and it's really got a vibe. And Copenhagen, in contrast, is very orderly and has beautiful clean air and a lot of cyclists, and it's just delightful to live here, but yeah, for different reasons. Yes, I love both cities very much, and it's been so fun. Learning Danish and experiencing Danish hygge.
You feel like you need to learn the Danish, or you want to anyway, because I guess you have new entourage that is Danish, that would make more sense to speak to them in Danish, or it's just to get into the culture?
I think wherever I am, I make an effort to try to learn the language. So I learned Thai when I was in Thailand, and I got up to a decent level of fluency where I could do basic interviews in Thai, and I wasn't dependent I wasn't dependent on my work colleagues all the time. I could understand a lot, and having survival Thai, I think, was important to be able to navigate in taxis and tell people what you want and problem solve. It was very useful.
When you said that you were Southeast Asia correspondent, I was thinking, how did that happen? Like, was it your newsroom that was looking for someone, you knew it, or how were the steps of going from wherever you started from to go to Canberra and then to see this next step that happened that's amazing? Like, I'm sure it was a brilliant.
Oh, I just applied for a job being in Bangkok. Yeah, so.
Okay. No, it's you were doing so many amazing things. I remember seeing so many of your posts and social media and on LinkedIn, especially, and more about the work that you were doing, the press club there, which was really inspiring as well. What was that like? Was that more somewhere where foreign correspondents would go, or did local media use press clubs there as well, or not so much? Or
yeah, so it was sort of a space that foreign journalists and local journalists would come together, and there were always events and panel discussions on important issues, and it was a very important platform for freedom of speech and some discussions that would take place at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Thailand that wouldn't be able to be had elsewhere for various different reasons. It was also a social place where people in diplomacy and the UN and NGOs could come together, and I tried to make the place more family friendly and attract younger members, and I picked out new chairs and tried to snap the place up and bring in a new menu and get a pizza oven and a new wine list, and it was a lot of fun to sort of put my stamp on the place, and it had been around for decades, and there were so many giants of Southeast Asian journalism who walked before me as the club's president, and so it was quite humbling when the board said, "Oh, we want you to step up." And I got involved in the Foreign Correspondents Club sort of a bit later on during my years in Thailand, but for those first 6 months, like, all I did was just work basically work and sleep. It was so busy, the news cycle, and I was busy sort of adjusting to being in a very different country, and doing language classes and running around trying to find a place to live and organizing life maintenance. And
was it easy to find somewhere to live in Thailand if you're a newly arrived Australian, I guess?
I found a really cool apartment. I was living on the Chao Phraya River, and I was living in this sort of grungy kind of old warehouse, but inside it was like this 90 it was like a New York loft style apartment, and there was like Danish lamps and chairs, and I was house sitting for an Australian photographer and his Danish wife who was stuck in Copenhagen.
What a coincidence.
I had this amazing apartment to myself overlooking the river, and I would just watch the like boats go up and down overnight, and that was, instead of watching television, that was my entertainment, watching boats go up and down. And there was these tugboats that would pull these rice barges, and they were 150 meters long and carrying different commodities, and I was just fascinated by like where they were going and who was on them, because there were people who lived on these boats, and sometimes you'd see like a father holding a baby, and there'd be a dog, and I was always curious about the life of the people who were working on these huge rice farms. And of an evening, you'd have these party boats going up and down as well, blaring pop music and Thai music, and they were quite empty because when I first got there, COVID was happening, and all the tourists had been sort of shut out of the country. But yeah, it was just quite an extraordinary time to be in Thailand, because they, for a long time, they had succeeded in keeping the virus out and people going about their daily life quite freely. And a bit later on, when I eventually got some time off, it was amazing to be able to like go to places like Phuket and have entire beaches to yourself, because yeah, all the tourists had been locked out, and I could stay at very fancy resorts for like 60% off the normal price. But it was also heartbreaking, because so many people's livelihoods were affected, and so yeah, I think slowly Thailand's tourism industry is starting to bounce back, but it's still nowhere near what it was at pre-pandemic levels. Before the pandemic, I think there was about 40 million tourists coming to Thailand a year, and was brought down to a trickle during COVID. And the Thai economy is so dependent on tourism. It's 20% of GDP, but they need to start thinking about how to do tourism sustainably, because you look at some of those islands like Koh Samui and Phuket and Maya Bay, where have you seen the movie, read the book The Beach?
Yeah,
of course. So Maya Bay was where they filmed the beach, and I remember visiting there a couple of years ago, and it's just such a pristine, beautiful sort of area, but it felt actually really strange being there, because there was 500 people on the beach like taking selfies, and it just didn't feel like a relaxing place to visit at all. And I think mass tourism is really doing a disservice to Thailand, and there's a huge environmental impact. There's a lot of plastic and waste, and there's a lot of consequences of mass tourism, and but I don't have the answers.
Through this weirdness and through this beautiful, which was the pandemic, and through this beautiful scenery every night on the river, when did you ever think that you were going to write a book, or how did that come up, and when did that come up, and how's that process been for you?
So I was actually working on a novel during the pandemic, and I learned a lot from that process, and I entered it into some unpublished manuscript competition, sent it off into the world, and no one was basically interested. Sure. I don't think in retrospect it was actually very good. It was it was too ambitious. There were too many characters. Like, the storyline was just bonkers. There were different time lines, and it was jumping from different years. And but I didn't know when I started that project that I could write something that long. It was like 80,000 words. So,
well done.
So my background is journalism, and as a journalist, like, the longest feature story you write might be 1,000 words, if you're lucky, 800 words. And so to write a novel, it's like being a sprinter, and then suddenly you're trying to run a marathon. It's a completely different discipline. And also, being a journalist, you have it drummed into you to write concisely, there's a method to writing a new story, the inverted pyramid, and you've got to put the most important stuff up top, and you just have to be so precise in your language. There's no room for adjectives, that you can't use semicolons. So shaking off that journalistic style, I think, took me a long time. And a lot of people who read this first manuscript that I wrote said that it sort of yeah, red light a feature story, which is not what I wanted. But I think that exercise was good because eventually I shook off sort of that journalistic style and learned how to use adjectives, and I could, yeah, be a bit more flowery. And I think the thing that I like about fiction writing is that you get to play God. Like, you get to destroy characters' lives in a very amazing, powerful way, and but it's completely harmless because, like, they're imaginary, really. So I enjoyed just having a project that that was very different to journalism. And then I started this second manuscript once I was in Bangkok, once the protests had calmed down, once the Myanmar military coup aftermath had sort of settled a bit. And I just sort of, kept sort of tapping away and working on it on weekends and after work. And and the thing about being a foreign correspondent is that you're often writing very grim stories about human rights atrocities and about people dying. And so, it was great to have an outlet to write something a bit more lighthearted, write something that just made my heart sing. So I went to a writer's residency in Sardinia in Italy.
That sounded amazing.
Yeah.
How did you find that, and how was it?
So I have dual citizenship. I'm Australian, and I have Italian heritage.
Brilliant.
Migrated to Australia in the 1950s. And so now that I live in Copenhagen, I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to go and do a writer's retreat in Italy? And so I did some Googling and came across Noce Fresca in Sardinia. And so I applied. And then a couple of weeks later, Francesca wrote back saying they had a vacancy in March. Did I want to come? And so, boom.
Amazing.
I traveled to Sardinia, and the writer's residency was in this tiny little village inland called Milis, and it's quite famous for orchards and oranges, and you could eat fresh oranges off the trees in the street. And I was staying on a donkey farm just outside the town, and I'd ride a bicycle into the village most days. And the donkey farm had this giant turkey that would run around saying, gobble, 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 gobble. And there was three vicious geese that would follow the turkey around. And then there was a three-legged dog, and the the three-legged dog took a liking to me, and so he would be sitting on the cottage steps every morning waiting for me to come out with a coffee, and then I'd have a three-legged dog, and then every time I was going into town, the three-legged dog would escape out of the gate and want to come with me, and then I'd have to take it home, and I was worried that it was going to lose another leg. I only had three legs. It was sort of a typical Italian village where you've got dogs just sort of roaming around and having a great time, and they know where to go home. But it was just a delightful place to fill my cup after my first brutal winter in Denmark. So I left Bangkok in November, and it was 32 degrees in Copenhagen, and it was -7. So to thaw out in 25 degrees in Sardinia, it was just so delightful. And the food just tasted like sunshine. Like, the tomatoes were just so fresh. And there was an Italian woman called Antonella at Noce Fresca, and she would cook for us, and I'd learn Sardinian local recipes from her, and I just loved watching her cook, and food was just so amazing. And yeah, so I'd get up at 6 a.m. and just write and write.
I was going to say, was there any writing happening?
Oh, yes. Lots of writing.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I find that it's such a privilege to have an uninterrupted window to write and get a flow happening, and I think that can be kind of hard when you're working full time and you're just carving out some writing time in between all the other things going on in your life, and I don't know, doing the dishes and washing and work and family stuff. It can be hard to find the right headspace to sort of sit down. But I had a month there, and I finished the manuscript while
amazing.
I was
amazing. That's so good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You never had a residency. You never had a retreat before, or had time for anything like that in Thailand, obviously, or when you started. Since you started writing,
I did do another similar residency program in the Blue Mountains. So that was last September. At Varuna, and it was a similar concept, but it was a week, and it was just also magical. So I'd go hiking in the morning, and the crisp mountain air, and the birds, and the wattle. After living in Bangkok and being in this mega city with huge condominiums and shopping malls and concrete, just to be in the Australian bush was so special. And I'd write all day, and then of a night we'd have a fireplace, and there was four other Australian authors who were all staying at Varuna at the time, and we'd get together and have a wine by the fireplace, and sometimes share our writing and have dinner. Yeah, it was very, very higgly, as you would call it in Denmark. Just very warm and cozy. And that was sort of the first time I was sharing this manuscript and reading aloud, and it was quite nerve-wracking at first, but the women authors who were at Varuna were just so encouraging, and they laughed at the right spots, and they're like, you have to keep going. We want to know what happens next. So I was working on my current manuscript.
Okay, so both times you've had time set apart, which is, you said to me before we talk today that it's a romance, is that right?
So it's a romantic comedy.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's inspired by some true life events. How I fell in love with a charming Danish man, just like Queen Mary.
Brilliant.
So we met actually in 2019 in September, and we didn't get to see each other for 21 months between meeting, and because there was a global pandemic, and so during that time we started writing love letters to each other with stamps and envelopes.
How brilliant.
And then eventually travel restrictions kind of eased, and so in July 2021 I came to Copenhagen, and that was a bit of a drama because the case numbers of COVID were increasing in Thailand, and it looked like the EU was putting Thailand off the safe list. And I flew to fly the weekend that the changes were happening. And so Andreas called the Danish authorities and was like, can she still come? What's the go? And this woman he spoke to on the phone, like, oh yes, you guys just need to fill out the sweetheart form.
There was an international sweetheart form. Yeah, yeah.
So it was basically a statutory declaration declaring that you were in a romantic relationship with a Danish person, and that was your reason to have essential travel to the Danish kingdom. We filled out the sweetheart form. I printed off like selfies of us, and I was all ready to show the Danish authorities when I arrived at the Copenhagen airport. But alas, like I just got waved through passport control. No one wanted to see my sweetheart form, and I was kind of disappointed. But anyway, that's not important. Important.
This is the title of the book, is it? Because it's cute. Not at all.
The important thing was that he was there to
meet
at the airport, and we had this amazing 20-minute hug, and he was crying, I was crying, and aww. Yeah, after 21 months, it was just so special to be in each other's arms, and we went on this amazing road trip around the Danish kingdom, and meet to Legoland and Skane, and we saw the world's biggest sandcastle. And then in October 2021, he came to Phuket, and we basically bounced from like one honeymoon experience to the next the period of time while I was a foreign correspondent in Thailand. And yeah, it's just been so fun to work on. Like I don't want it to be an exact sort of memoir or it's sort of loosely
such
based
a good story anyway.
It's not 100% like reflection on what happened, but yeah, it's loosely inspired by true events, and it's kind of been fun to have a project to work on that was very different to the journalism that I was working on when I was based in Thailand.
And have you had time to see what happened to the manuscript next, or it's more about editing it now and getting it ready and then seeing what happens?
So I've submitted it to a literary agent, and hoping
fingers
to get
crossed.
Back soon. I had enter it into some unpublished manuscript competitions in Australia, but alas, they don't allow people to enter if you're not a resident of Australia. So, if you're an expat, it's on your bike, bad luck. And I think really short-sighted, because the country has such a long history of amazing expat writers enriching the cultural landscape.
I think I can think of, but I can't remember which ones they were. Maybe there's like one or two which just says Australian writer, which doesn't say you have to be living. But I always check that, because at the beginning when I was trying to, I mean, and that's part of the whole reason of, you know, having a writers festival and having these conversations, how do people get published or get to the next step, whatever, which is the only reason why I bring it up. But it's not so straightforward to be writing somewhere else and be wanting your work to be represented. What's been your experience, and what do you think is like positives or your experiences with festivals in literature?
Some of my favorite festivals have been actually in the smaller ones, a bit more intimate. So I really loved going to Clune's Booktown a few years ago.
Wonderful.
And I loved the Bendigo Writers Festival. That's where my parents live. But last year, actually, when I was still living in Bangkok, I got asked to host some author talk at the at the Bangkok Literature Festival. It was so fabulous. So it was held at the Nelson Hayes Library, which is this gorgeous old building that was designed by an Italian architect in the 1800s, and it's just such a beautiful library, and there was an amazing lineup of very talented young Southeast Asian authors and other authors from all over the world. So I hosted a couple of panel discussions, and there was a Thai American author named Mana Dawn on my couch, and so he writes short stories about the real Thailand, not sort of the land of smiles and the true brochure, but yeah, like families like striving to control their destinies in this sort of merciless metropolis, and it's a very sort of dark collection of stories, but very lyrical and just written with a lot of rawness and heart. And one of my favorite stories is it's actually about these young guys who grew up in the Klong Toi slum, and they become volunteer first responders because they're chasing some good karma for their next life. And so Bangkok has a very cobbled together sort of ambulance system. And so you get sort of people who have a van who sort of set up this like informal ambulance service, and they're sort of running around trying to collect patients in car accidents and then take them to a hospital so they can get a commission from a hospital. And I just loved that particular story so much. Because when traffic is just chaotic in Bangkok, and you see car crashes all the time, and you see people who've come off motorbikes, and the way that he just sort of captured the drama and the scene and the sense of place, he's a very, very good. And another author who I interviewed, the Thai-Chinese author, Ping Wang Te Chawat. And she's written this gorgeous debut novel called The Moon Represents My Heart. And it's a love story about a family of time travellers. And that is going to be into a Netflix series in coming years. And both Mei and Pim, they were working on their next book projects. Hopefully there'll be new books coming out very, very soon. There was another author at the Bangkok Literature Festival who also sort of really stood out. A Lao Canadian woman, Sylvain Kam Tam Mo Vong Sa, and she writes so eloquently about the lives of refugees and migrants and moments of racism in everyday life. And one of her short stories that really struck a chord with me was about a little girl in grade one, and at school she's given a story book to take home as her reader. And so she goes home and is reading the book, and she asks her dad, how do you spell, how do you say this word? And he says, it's knife. And the word is knife. And so she goes to school the next day and argues with her teacher that it's knife, not knife. And she gets in trouble at school. And I can kind of relate to that because I've been learning Danish, and there's so many silent letters and letters that you don't say in Danish words, and it's confusing when you're trying to learn a new language and you're trying to learn the rules, but there aren't no rules, and people just, I don't know, speak it a certain way because that's how you do it, and you've always known that, and you've never thought about why it's like that, but then explaining it to someone else, it makes no sense.
Oh, thanks for sharing those. How amazing. And hopefully we will at one stage, or hopefully sooner rather than later, have some South Asian writers at the festival in Belgium. I really can't wait to see you and hear more about this book, and wish it all the best of luck for its travels once it gets out there. And I don't know, if you wanted to say anything else about what you've thought so far, I don't know, about writing in Denmark maybe, or are you too busy working now again so there's not much time for writing, or what are you thinking, I have this impression that it's a very rich literary scene.
I'm still exploring the literary scene.
All right, cool.
There's a lot of really cute book shops. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites is called Timers Magazine, and they have a cafe next door, and I started a lazy person's book club.
Oh, that's right, brilliant! That's so good.
And
it's
so
such
every
a name. It's so, it feels like so inviting, because like everyone's always saying how they don't have time to read. How's it going?
It's going so well. It's very higglish, as you'd say in Denmark. It's very cozy. The bar is really low. Like you just basically come along, you bring something that you've been reading lately. It could be anything. It could be a book. It could be a poem. It could be just something funny off the internet. And you spend a couple of minutes like reading out whatever you've brought along, and then we just talk about it and read the patch. And so, yeah, it's like a normal book club, but you're not, I guess, racing the clock to read this book as everyone else within a month period or 6 weeks. And so, yeah, very low-key, no pressure. And it's great to, I guess, get ideas of what people are reading, and even to just revisit some old classics that you might not have thought about for a while. So one of the women who came to the last one, she read out a poem by Rumi, The Guest House, and it was just delightful to talk about that. She'd just moved to Copenhagen from Aarhus in the height of winter, and so it was a tough transition for her, and I just love how words bring people together, and how books can spark conversations and make the world slightly less lonely.
So that was Lisa Martin, who is a journalist now based in Copenhagen. Great to catch up with her. We're really looking forward to having not one but two Australian journalists join us at the Writers Festival of Belgium this year, which you can find more information about us at writefest.be. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. This podcast is produced by Paul McNally, and the guitar you hear is played by Craig Winnicker. So we'll talk to you soon. Keep writing.